seriously, the movie's long, but for me, I was like, I'll take 3.5 hours.
Did it feel long to you, though?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it didn't feel long to me either. I've seen 90-minute long movies that felt longer than The Irishman was.
Bro, I pissed twice. I pissed twice during a 3.5-hour movie.
Right on the couch, folks.
I usually piss like 5 times during a 2-hour movie. Yeah. That shows you how invested I was in this thing.
The Epic Film Dies Podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. We're going to review a film called The Irishman in this week's episode. I, of course, am your humble EFG, Nick.
And yeah, I'm Justin, and Nick's still mad at me because as of tonight, it's recording the Epic Film Guys sponsored screening of Sam Mendes's 1917.
You're not my dad.
I got to see the movie. Hey, Nick, I saw 1917.
Now you go and you die.
Didn't. And you didn't.
Now
and
you go didn't. And die.
But I got to bite my tongue. I got to keep quiet about that masterpiece. That's right. You heard that word coming out of my mouth in connection to that movie. And talk about another movie, which I may call the same title later on in this review.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
I know you're mad. You had a pass waiting for you to see the movie.
I get out of work at 4:30. I can't make it to AMC Tyson's Corners in like 2 hours from here.
Nick, quit
right?
your fucking job. Quit your fucking job, or it's a death in the family.
Yeah, right?
A random third cousin died that I haven't seen in 20 years. I need to go to their funeral immediately. I'm just telling you. I can't wait to talk about that movie, but I've been chomping at the fucking bit to talk about this movie because I did get a chance to see it on the big screen a few weeks ago.
You
our humble
son of a
bitch, god of podcasting, Saucy, Loy Saucy, he booked it at the Alamo Draft House, and I did sit there. Thank you, Colby, and watch it on the big screen. Unlike most people that have seen it, I did get to see it in a theater environment with a small audience. It wasn't a packed theater or anything like that. But it was a great experience, and I've been really excited to talk about it, and you finally watched it, so that's what we're doing. We're going to review The Irishman.
I wish you'd get out of my life and shut up.
The Napoleon Dynamite soundboard is always here. So, ladies and gentlemen, The Irishman is a film based on the book I Heard You Paint Houses, which chronicles the life of Frank Sheeran, who was a truck driver who became a mob hitman working for Russell Bufalino, that's Joe Pesci, which thank fuck Martin Scorsese got him to come out of retirement to be in this movie. Because Joe Pesci is like, man, just watching him on screen just made me realize how much I miss Joe Pesci in things, period. But it also stars Robert De Niro as Sheeran, stars Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa. It also shows up, I mean, literally any Italian-American actor that you could possibly think of pops up in this. Ray Romano's in it. Bobby Cannavale is in it. And Harvey Keitel is in it.
Ooh, Harvey Keitel. Yeah. The legend himself even shows up. Yeah,
so
baby.
Many. And I mean, a lot of, like, especially if you watch anything that's, like, anything mob-related over the past, like, 15, 20 years, you're going to recognize just a whole bunch of, like, bit players and whatnot as well. Because, I mean, it's... You gotta dip from the well that you have to dip from, I guess, whenever you're talking mobsters. So, Justin, I mean, this film's 3.5 hours long. 3 hours and 29 minutes, technically. Okay. And, I mean, basically, this chronicles Sheeran's life as a hitman working under Russell. It chronicles kind of the relationship and the friendship that he builds with one Jimmy Hoffa. Which I like, there's a point in the film that they make, that De Niro makes, where he talks about how people nowadays, and that was Daya from Orange is the New Black, was his nurse at the end of the movie.
That is correct, yeah. Slight cameo there.
So, yeah, it just, 3.5 hours long, and you also get like his relationship with Jimmy Hoffa, but I like I said, at the end of that, it talks about how people today don't even know who Jimmy Hoffa was. Or anything like that. So can you give us, Justin, delve into it here. Let's dive in before we get to your initial thoughts. A little bit more kind of backstory to this movie. When's it set? When do we get to see all this stuff? When does it take place? Get down in here. Get dirty. Rub your hands all around it. Get filthy. Get saucy on it. Like you're holding a brand new pack of Argyle socks, baby.
Well, I mean, the movie
that's a lot of cum.
Is mostly based in the 1950s throughout the 1970s. If you don't know who Jimmy Hoffa is, he was the head of the Teamsters Union. This guy was basically a legend. And if you want to know more about this guy, like, I would honestly recommend the movie that I grew up watching over and over and over again by none other than Danny DeVito himself, the movie Hoffa, starring Jack Nicholson, who plays Jimmy Hoffa in a different movie. A great movie that's way more about Jimmy Hoffa himself than this movie was. Unions were a very important thing during this time, and Jimmy Hoffa was basically like this celebrity of the union world. He was the president. He was known to collaborate with gangsters, but everyone respected him. And we see in this movie a friendship and a backstory with Frank Sheeran that we had never heard much about before, including in the Jimmy Hoffa movie, Hoffa, directed by Danny DeVito, which I definitely recommend you watch. But what I think this movie does the best is it showcases relationships. At its core, Nick, it's about regret, it's about growing old, and it's about redemption. And it's about taking the time late in your life and reviewing your life choices and really kind of just reflecting on those choices. And I mean, there are enough things in this movie that, I mean, as a person that has done a lot of bad things in his life, I could see myself doing the same thing in a similar fashion. I will say right off the bat that this is one of my favorite movies of the year so far. I think Martin Scorsese is a legendary filmmaker. I think people need to really take the time to stop complaining about the fact that he doesn't like Marvel movies. Who gives a fuck if he doesn't like Marvel movies?
I don't like him either.
Shut up.
What?
Shut up. You love Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I do love Ant-Man and the Wasp, though.
You son of... How dare
now
you?
Now you're going to die.
That's but right, no, boy, I mean, Sauce. You get in here and you defend my honor.
There's this whole stupid meme going around with boomer this, millennial that. Like, seriously, people, stop. Scorsese's directed more iconic films than anything Marvel will ever be able to live up to. And I like those movies, but the reality is this man is making a movie that has his personality at its core, and he's putting himself into this story. This isn't just a movie about these characters, these real life people that lived on this planet. This is Martin Scorsese saying something about himself in this story. And the fact that he's in his, I think he's almost, maybe he's in his 80s. I thought he was in his late 70s, early 80s. I mean, that's saying something, where the main cast in this movie is all old people. All old people. But the performances here are plenty, and definitely the best of any of these actors that we've seen, I'd say, in the last 10 to maybe even 15 years. And Nick, to piggyback off what you said earlier, Joe Pesci is a national treasure.
He's
an international treasure.
He really is.
This guy, I can't believe the performance that this man churns out in this movie, having been retired for over 20 fucking years. Yes, we know the Snickers commercial. It happened. I don't count it. You shouldn't either. It happened that one Super Bowl. I know you're remembering it. But aside from that, Joe Pesci has not acted or been in a movie since a movie that Robert De Niro directed. And I could not tell you enough how much his performance blew me away in this thing. I'm the Scorsese guy, though, on this show. Not you. Because Nick has not seen Casino.
Nope.
Goodfellas.
Nope.
You've seen Taxi Driver, right?
Nope.
So.
Oh, yes, Pod Daddy.
I will refrain from verbally attacking you in a vicious fashion and throw it to you.
He'll do it later, ladies and gentlemen. I need your help.
I need to hear your initial thoughts on this movie. Because you know what? The special thing about this, though, is being the fan that I am of Scorsese and seeing this in a different viewpoint than you, is that I get to hear it from you being the, you know, not saying you're a non-fan.
The Scorsese lay person, as you will.
Yeah.
So here's a couple of things I want to say about this movie out front. I think this is Scorsese indulging himself a lot. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. It kind of depends on how you want to view that whole thing. But I definitely think it is Scorsese indulging himself a lot. Again, this film is 3.5 hours. I will say, and I said this was my first initial reaction afterward, I didn't feel the runtime of this film. I was invested in it the whole way through, even though it's 3.5 hours long. I never had a point in this film where I was like, oh my God, this movie is so long, or this movie is still going. I was invested. I was right there along with these characters, and like I was part of it. Like, I like that it allows different things to play out over a longer period of time, like different scenes, different interactions, different characterizations, things of that nature. I really, really enjoy that. And I like that you get to see this relationship build up between Hoffa and Sheeran. I really, really like that. You know, you get to see Hoffa getting close with Sheeran's family, and you get to see, again, Joe Pesci. And Joe Pesci's so understated in this role. Like, and that's kind of the great thing about it, is it's not like that kind of Pesci, like where it's got that manic energy to it, like, yeah, where he goes subtle, nuts or anything. Yeah. You know, it's I'm really, really glad that, like I said, that Scorsese, like, literally, like, hundreds of times, like, practically begged him to come out of retirement to do this.
Let's make this clear, man. Let's make this clear. They held up this movie for Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
They held it up for many, many years. They had many meetings with Marty, Robert, and Al, and basically everyone wanted in except for Pesci. He just kept saying no. He didn't want to revisit that same gangster character that he played in Goodfellas or Casino, that little firecracker. And in this case, they had to keep telling him, no, this is a totally different character. And yeah, he comes through in fucking spades. Totally subdued, nuanced, subtle. He's brilliant. I mean, I came out of this thing, and it's weird because he's so quiet in the movie. He's a major player, but he's in the background. But it's my personal favorite performance of the film. Nick, I'm already saying this right now, early on in the review. I hope he gets nominated for Best Supporting. I'm praying he does. I don't know if it's going to happen, but his performance is so good, and he does it with, like, such little effort that it's like,
I think that's the really, you know, powerful thing about it, is it's against everything that you expect from a Pesci performance. I was kind of waiting, like you get Pacino in this, and Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa, and Pacino, and it's, this is funny because I talked just recently when we did a Patreon review of Carlito's Way, I did it with Paul from the Countdown, and we talked in that review about Pacino going full Pacino, kind of.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
a thing.
Where he,
that's
Pacino's out, you know, he gets a thing where he yells and he's very exaggerated and everything, and that happens a couple of times in this movie where Pacino really leans into the character pretty hard. It doesn't take me out of the movie or anything like that, because Pacino's Pacino, and it makes sense in the moment that he's doing it, like the one scene where he's yelling at all of the different, you know, all the different union members for,
yep,
the fact that they screwed up and he's going to end up going to prison and everything. I love all that. I really, really loved, you know, Pacino in the film. And I love Pesci in the film. I really, really do. But I think easily, and I think when it leans into, especially when you tend to get back toward the third act of the movie, especially the latter part of it, you really start to see more of a layered performance, more of a nuanced performance out of Robert De Niro than I think we've seen in a very long time. Like, there's just a layer more to what he's doing with the Frank Sheeran character when, you know, it comes time. And this is based on a book that was written 15 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, based on things that happened back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So there's not going to be a spoiler wall. Trump's not coming in here. Justin's not going to have to yell at him to get out and chase him out of here or anything. But, you know, so when it comes to that moment when basically they sit down with Frank and they say, you're going to be the one that's going to off Hoffa. Because, I mean, again, and this isn't even proven. Like, this isn't even confirmed. It's just, like, speculation.
It's hearsay.
It's hearsay.
It's like, hearsay based on... Yes.
We don't know 100% exactly what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Nobody does. Nobody does. It's one of those fabled things. I still remember there's a joke in The Simpsons that played out about it where, you know, when Homer becomes the president of the union, there's a joke about the old president of the union, which is a reference to Hoffa, you know, and then there was a longstanding rumor that Hoffa was buried under the Meadowlands, under Giants Stadium in New Jersey, and things. The football player trips over the shape of a body in the Meadowlands when he's running. But, you know, it's like nobody knows what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. So this is like literally just like, if we're taking Frank Sheeran's word for it, this is what happened, you know. But there's even conflicts in terms of like the official investigation versus what Sheeran says. So I don't really, I mean, this is based on real events and it's based on real people, but I don't necessarily know if I view it as entirely a work of fact. I view it mostly as a work of fiction.
Yeah, it's a work of fiction. It's a viewpoint on history.
We'll never know, but the great thing about it is like I said, I think that De Niro gives you enough. Like, he's a very loyal soldier and he's very quiet and he's very reserved. Like, whenever he's asked to do something, like, very, very generally speaking, he does it. He doesn't ever have any kind of qualms about performing the job that's required of him. But you can see the conflict in the character without him coming out at Russ, who he very, very much respects, which is Pesci's character. When they tell him that you're going to be the one that's going to do it, like, you could see the conflict and you could see the emotionality that's, like, kind of overwhelming him, but he never says it. Like, he never says it out loud. That's all
exactly
just based on nonverbal cues from De Niro in his performance, which, I mean, like, really is the mark of a map. Like, I mean, nothing for nothing, no matter what you say about this film, it's a literal fucking masterclass in acting. You got Pacino, Pesci. You've got, like, even Ray Romano's fucking great in this movie. Bobby Cannavale's great in this movie.
There's,
like,
no one that's bad in this
great
movie.
In this fucking
no one's
movie.
Bad in this movie. No one's bad in this movie. No. And I couldn't agree more with you about De Niro. For some reason, Pesci just resonated a little bit more. But, I mean,
you know why? And
I
I'll tell you why.
You.
I'll tell you why. Because it's, and Pesci's great. He's amazing in the film. I love his performance. But it's because he's not doing the Pesci thing. He's so against type when he, I mean, he's a gangster because, I mean, Pesci's played gangsters, obviously, but he's so against type because when you think about Joe Pesci, you think about,
well, he's, like, calm.
Goodfellas and shit, you know?
Dude, he's calm. He's not yelling. He's not screaming.
Exactly.
He's not trying to stab somebody with a pen in their throat.
Never once. Like, he's always very, very reserved, very calm, very collected.
Yeah, but with De Niro, I can't think of another performance on this level from him. I literally can't in the last 10, 15 years. I mean, he was good in Silver Linings Playbook as a father character, but with this kind of focus and, you know, the spotlight shining down on him in this movie, I think this is his swan song. And I think, in a way, you're totally right in the fact that you said Scorsese was kind of indulging himself. This is all of their swan songs in a way. And I think this is Marty's way of kind of doing it cinematically, saying, like, I got one more of these in me, even though in an interview the other day that I listened to, he said, I'd hope to keep doing these. And at his age, I can't believe he's able to craft a movie this fucking good together. I'm like, dude, this is filmmaking 101. But there are things in this movie that will blow your mind if you're a fan of Marty's or not. And just to be able to get performances out of these guys, I mean, let's face it. All of these actors in this movie have done shit movies. De Niro especially. Pacino's on that list too. At this point in their life, they've done what they're going to do. They've won their Oscars. You know what I mean? Like, they know their icons. But in this movie, they're not phoning it in.
Yeah.
They're deeply embedded in this material. They give a fuck about it. And it's because of who's at the helm and the connection and their chemistry together. And I mean, like, just... I can't say enough. You're totally right about the performances in this movie. But for me, at least, the story, someone that loves history and especially these periods, Marty nails them perfectly to a T. But they're not period pieces in the way where he's not going out of his way to go, oh, look over here. Look at what song is played here. Look at what's on the wall there. To him, it's background. It's all right. It's all accurate. But he's not trying to shove it in your face and showcase it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably one of the things that the film does best is... it really, really immerses you in this time frame. Like, you never kind of question where you are in that kind of place in American history or anything. But we got to bring it up here because, I mean, there's probably no other real place to talk about it. Now, I will say, Justin, that I watched
the CG.
I watched this on my normal 1080p TV. Like, I don't have 4K. I didn't watch it in the theater or anything like that. So... I thought, honestly, I thought the de-aging stuff all looked fine. I did not have a problem with it literally.
Wow.
You could tell that there's CGI in play, but it's not distracting. And I think for me, it doesn't take away because it's just used to de-age characters. So it's not used like in a flashy way or anything like that where I think it detracts away from what you're looking at. Like, you know what you're looking at is enhanced digitally, but it doesn't take away from anything in the film for me. Like, I still, like, it's still all about the performances that these characters are giving and the importance of those things as opposed to anything else. Like, those are the most important things to me.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Nick, the first time I saw it, I did see it in the theater. I saw it in Theater A at Alamo, which is their 4K with Dolby Atmos. And it looked like, Nick, because obviously if you watch it on a 4K TV, Netflix didn't have Marty make the movie 4K with HDR. I think they actually sent that copy. And for me, it took like 15 minutes to kind of get over it because you're seeing it really big in front of you.
In the first scene where it happens, which I believe is the scene at the gas station between...
Yes, the gas station.
Yeah, between when
Russell
and Pesci.
And Frank, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, so when they're doing that, because they're close-up shots, there's no way to... You can't hide that. So they're close-ups when they're looking at each other over the truck.
And I'll say I'll say this. I think that in terms of the CG, I think that it's not as bad or noticeable, especially on when they youngify Pesci in those scenes, because that definitely like is referencing De Niro. I don't know what the fuck they were doing with. Like, I don't know if
here's the thing too, and I don't mean to cut you off, but dude, they gave him those contacts. They should have never given him blue contacts. He doesn't need his eyes blue just to look more like Frank Sheeran. Like, I get it, he's Irish. He should have the blue contacts. They stood out more than anything else, so I was constantly looking at those. But like I said, I saw someone online say, "Worst CGI de-aging ever." And I'm like, bro, go watch fucking Tron Legacy over in this motherfucker and get back to me. I mean, I think that it was done subtle. And they came out and said that they weren't going to go all Marvel on it and like try to make him look super young. Obviously, their jawlines change. They're not going to go in and digitally shave that. They're, you know, so De Niro doesn't really look like De Niro from, say, Michael Mann's Heat. Or anything like that. Which, they're de-aging them enough to make them look a little younger.
That's the one kind of issue I have with it, because I think that in terms of especially, I mean, granted, you don't get a lot of young Pesci in the film, you know, or at least not in some scenes. Like, you know, Pesci, I don't think they did nearly as much of it. But Pesci, like, I feel like that's what they did. I feel like they went back to, like, older, you know, Pesci performances, you know, like him in previous movies, and they kind of use that as models or whatnot. And it was clear that they didn't with De Niro, and maybe it's more of the fact that that's how they employed the de-aging technology. Like I said, it was clear that it was still like a CGI face swapped Robert De Niro. When Pesci, when they did the younger, like, it was clear that they were trying to aim for, like, let's make Joe Pesci look like he looked when he was younger. I bought it. Like, I completely bought it, but I never bought it with De Niro. It always felt like a fake to me. It always felt like a little bit of a trick. It's not a check against the movie, and it doesn't affect my score for the movie, but it's, I don't know, like, I don't know why they made that decision with one character and not with the other. I don't know if that was your experience with it as well, but that was how I felt about it.
Well, yeah, De Niro stood out a lot more because we're seeing a lot more of him. He's our main character, whatever. And with Pacino, it's very subtle as well. And I think the one thing they tried to do the most in the movie to sell the whole package, if you will, is their movements. They're old men. They're very, very old men. And obviously, there's some scenes. There's a scene where Frank Sheeran takes, a shop owner yells at his daughter. He finds out about it. He's pissed about it. And he goes down to the store with his daughter and he beats the fucking shit out of the store owner. You could tell because it's done practically with Robert De Niro grabbing the store owner actor out on the street and beating him up and crushing his hand. You could tell that De Niro's like an old man doing this and that he's kind of in place of what De Niro at a young age would do. It's just done in a slower way. Like the way he's moving, he almost falls over.
Yeah.
And myself and the sauce did mention this, even though he has not seen this movie yet. He made a great point. He said Scorsese is a masterclass director, but his movies are known for having technical issues. He's not the best technical director, so there are a lot of errors in his movies. So something like seeing De Niro like half trip while he's trying to beat up a guy on the ground, that's kind of a normal known thing for us to see. So it didn't bother me as much. You're going in this movie, you're knowing these actors are all way older than they're playing in the movie until they get, you know, until they make them up to look even older than they are now. But overall, like I said, 15 minutes in, I bought it, I got over it, and I was immersed in the movie and the story and the characters. I wasn't sitting there constantly like picking it apart. You know what I mean? And this is Scorsese's first time doing this process. The movie was in post for an extra, I believe, 8 months, I think he said, because of the fact that they'd keep going back to it and he was just unhappy with the de-aging. He'd keep going back and changing or adding or removing and just playing with it until he was happy with it, until Netflix is like, you're done, let's release the movie, you know? So
I think he gets to a point in the film where it's fine. It doesn't distract me. It's noticeable. Like, I can tell when I'm watching it, especially with De Niro. It's far more noticeable, but it doesn't detract from the experience of the film to me. Like, I think that, like, the best things about the film are still, like, all the costume work that they did, all of the set decoration, all of the production design, like
fucking set design, Pacino's all the
hair,
aspects.
Like, Pacino's hair as fucking Hoffa is, like, spot on. Like, it looks fucking just crazy, you know? Like, it's good. It you know, it all that kind of stuff, all those things are good. Here's really the thing that I want to drive home about this movie, because I don't know if I have that much more to say about it, even though I sat and watched the whole 3.5 fucking hours of the thing. Two things about this film don't necessarily work for me. First is Peggy's relationship with Frank, because we're meant to care more when we get down to the end of the film, when Peggy, who is the adult Peggy, is played by Anna Paquin. There was all this ado in the press where it was like, oh, she didn't have a big enough role or whatever, because somebody
didn't talk.
Has to find, like, these different things about it. It's understandable in the film, like, when you view the character the way that we view the character in the film, why the character is that way. So I'm not going to draw attention to any of that, because I think that was a whole silly manufactured controversy that somebody tried to bring up to make about whatever. But I will say, I don't really feel like there's enough of that. I think in a 3.5 hour runtime, and I think while I didn't feel it, while I didn't feel the runtime is apparent in the spacing of things. Like, some things are just spaced out too far. By the time you get back to a Peggy, I'm like, I got to kind of jog in my memory and be like, oh yeah, this is this person, this is this person, this is this person. It negatively affected the film for me, just because I'm just like, you know, like, I think you could have tightened this up. I don't think this film needed to be this long or anything of that nature. And I don't necessarily, like, the emotional relationship between Peggy and Frank, like, that for me, it didn't have the weight that I think that maybe Scorsese wanted it to have. By the time I got there to the end, like, Peggy wasn't enough of a focal character throughout the rest of the story for me to get to that point where I should be upset for, you know, for Frank that he's lost this relationship or whatever. And the only other thing that I was going to say about the film, the thing that I really, and I think is the best thing about the film, is how unceremonial the violence in the film is. It comes out of nowhere. You never know when it's going to happen, and it's so quick and it's
amen.
So precise.
Fucking amen, that dude.
Literally, they just fucking, like, pop out of the woodwork. Like, all of a sudden, he's going to do a hit. Boom, he's in, he's out. That gun is out. Bam, bam, bam. Somebody gets a few fucking bullets in the head, and they're down. It's not like this big glorified action sequence like you're going to see in, like, a Tarantino or whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because I love Tarantino-style violence, too. But this film didn't need that. It didn't need that super over-the-top kind of thing. It was very quick. It was very fast. Like, some of the different character kills, you know, like, literally Frank fucking walks up, bam bam, like, a couple of shots to the fucking head, the person goes down, he's gone, like, you know. And the film doesn't dwell on it, because it's just kind of a reality, and it's just kind of a part of these characters' lives, where it's almost more second nature, and it's almost more procedural than anything else. And I really, really like that touch that Scorsese put on it.
All right, so I'm going to address the elephant in the room. I can't believe that you haven't yet. This is your pet motherfucking peeve. Ladies and gentlemen, this motherfucker has gone through this entire review and hasn't mentioned a single thing about the narration over the entire 3.5 hour runtime. Yes, Nick Haskins, epic film guy Nick, the guy that hates narration over movies. Is it true that the narration worked for you? Is that why you didn't hate it? What happened?
The narration's fine. It's not a detracting element, but I don't necessarily think it adds a whole lot to anything either. Because here's one thing that this film does that I don't think it needs to do. It throws, like, a whole bunch of characters at you, and then it will flash, like, Suicide Squad style, their fucking vital stats and, like, how they died and where they died up on the screen real quick. Why? Do we need to know any of this?
I knew you wouldn't like that. But I knew you wouldn't like that.
We don't need
that.
To know any of this, because none of these characters are fucking important to us or to the story that we're telling.
I guess it's because
these are all people that Frank killed at some point. At least that's what I gleaned from it. Like, that's why we're supposed to care, why we're supposed to think about whatever.
Well, for history buffs, people that know the story, it, Nick, I think
which
it
is
was
fine.
Just,
which is fine. Yeah. But the problem is it's in and out. It's so quick and gone. Like, I don't, like, have any frame of reference for any of these people or anything, and the film doesn't give me one. It's like, here's this character that you're only going to meet for 2 seconds in a 3.5 hour movie. Here's a quick blurb about how they die. It's like, it loses its effect after a while. Like, I don't think it needs to be in there. The narration, so here's, and I don't hate all narration in films, people. It depends on how
you could have fooled our listeners.
It depends on how, well, that's because one of my worst films of the decade will be Live by Night, which literally is Ben Affleck just sitting and telling the story at the audience. I don't think that's what's happening here. And I think that when you frame it and when you use a device like in Ad Astra, which is currently like my favorite film of the year, in Ad Astra, it's Brad Pitt's inner monologue, which I really like. In this, it's less an inner monologue, but it's more, these scenes are Sheeran, an elderly Sheeran, at the nursing home telling this story out loud. He's telling it to someone as if there's people in there in the room with him, as if he's talking to people. He's really talking to the audience. Like, we get that. But it's the way in which the technique is used that it doesn't become too terribly distracting. And it's a 3.5 hour movie, and it's not that prevalent throughout a good majority of it. It's really not. It's not used that much.
I'm going to say, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because the one thing that I was worried about when I walked out of that movie, the first thing I said to Loy Sauce was, Nick may or may not like this movie.
The problem with narration in film.
It may be the narration that's going to make or break it.
I didn't like the little blurbs about, oh, this is this person and this is how they died, because there's no frame of reference for that for us in the movie. It means nothing to us as an audience member. It's like, oh, this was this person. Who the fuck does that? What does that mean? It means nothing to me as a person, as a lay person watching this film, if you don't have the historical context. It's kind of like when you watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and you don't understand who Charlie Manson was and who all those kind of things were, like the criticisms that got levied against that film for, if you don't know the history of it, you're not going to go into it with that kind of perspective. That's fine. It's not going to distract from my score a total, like, terrible amount or anything. But, like, narration in film, like, if this would have just been Frank Sheeran sitting and just telling the story at us, like, instead of actually us seeing it on the screen and he's like, yeah, I took off in the house and I put a couple slugs in the back of his ear and dropped him on the ground and he was dead. That's bad narration in a film when you're just telling the audience stuff instead of showing them stuff. Like, all he's really doing is just using it to kind of fill in a little bit of little bits of character details, little sprinkles of this, little sprinkles of that. It's not used very prevalently.
Plus,
it's not overwhelming. It's fine. It's not terrible. Like, go watch Live by Night if you want to see bad fucking narration in film, because it's literally Affleck just telling the story at you while just random scenes play out in front of you.
Plus, I was going to say, this man here, yes, he is a Scorsese virgin in a way. He has not seen Goodfellas or Casino. And both of those movies, see, before I went to see The Irishman, I watched Goodfellas again. I watched Casino again. And goddamn, does Casino have, holy fuck, a shit ton of narration. I think that Nick might, he might keel over.
One
I don't
of
know.
These days.
But
I'll get there one of these days.
But Marty
Next
is the king
is
of it.
He's coming back at some point soon.
He's the king of it. So if anyone can handle it, and Nick will accept it and swallow it like a big mouthful of cum, it's Marty. So I was so happy to hear that. I mean, for me, I know that you're done talking about the movie.
It's 3.5 hours. And like I said, it's not like there's not any in the film, but it's always just usually little sprinklings of character details and stuff like that. Like whatever, like we get to see it. And that's the important thing. If you're in this medium, if you're watching a fucking film, you should see the important shit on the screen, and you do. And that's like, if you're just peppering in, or like I said, like in Ad Astra, it's literally just his inner monologue. It's like his inner thoughts. That's fine. That's not bad. I don't hate all narration, people. I hate bad narration. Just like I hate bad camera work or bad action sequences, like in Charlie's Angels or whatever. And why can a film like this, that's directed by like literally a human fossil, Scorsese's like 8,000 years old, guys. I love him, but he's old. Why can he shoot something that's like tense, an action-packed, without a cut, that looks brilliant, like fucking this character walking into this scene or walking up to this guy, boom, boom, drops him, scoots off in the fucking, whatever. Like, but you can't get it right in like an action film. This isn't even an action film, and it has better action than Charlie's Angels had. I'm not going to talk about Charlie's Angels anymore. And I am, you're right, Justin. The thing that I walked away from this film on, and I'm going to give it a rating, and I want to pitch it over to you and let you do whatever, spew whatever man yogurt over this you're going to do.
Ooh, yeah.
I watched this film for 3.5 hours, and I didn't hate the film. Like, I've seen a lot of reactions that this was so long. I didn't feel the runtime at all. It felt fine to me. I was invested the whole way through. I enjoyed the characters. It's a masterclass in directing and in acting. Everything's on point here, but I just wasn't, like, blown away by it. I enjoyed my time with it. I liked it. But that's pretty much it. I'm slapping a 7 out of 10 on it. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's bad. I think it's worth a watch. It has some great, like I said, the violence especially. I think that those scenes, and because they're so few and far between, you never kind of know when they're coming. So they're great. They play off really, really well. And Scorsese does them extremely effectively. Easily half of my fucking score for this movie is the way that he uses the violence in the film, because it's great. It's great. Masterclass performances by all the actors involved, especially, you know, the main three of Pacino, De Niro, and Pesci. I mean, like I said, it's great, and it's got a lot of great things to it. It's just like, at 3.5 hours, you probably could have shaved some of this back to give it more dramatic punch, and then maybe it would have felt a little bit better to me. I think the biggest missed opportunity, I'll say it flat out, the biggest missed opportunity in this film is the Frank Peggy relationship. You just don't get enough of it for me to care when she surmises that he is the one that killed Hoffa, and then she refuses to speak to him ever again in his life. And like, for me, I don't, make me care about that more. But you don't, I think this is stretched out too far, and her character is too minute of a player in the whole thing that I'm not as invested as I should be. So that's it for me. 7 out of 10. You run for the hills with it, baby. I enjoyed it.
I will run for the hills, because this is, I feel like, the Scorsese masterpiece that we all have to be appreciative and thankful that we actually are able to get here, because let's face it, Nick even said it perfectly. The man is a fossil, and who knows what else he's going to make, or who's going to let him make it, or who's going to release it. The performances, fucking knockout from everybody.
Beyond knockout.
As long, seriously, the movie's long, but for me, I was like, I'll take 3.5 hours.
Did it feel long to you, though?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it didn't feel long to me either. I've seen 90-minute long movies that felt longer than The Irishman was.
Bro, I pissed twice. I pissed twice during a 3.5 hour movie.
Right on the couch, folks.
I usually piss like 5 times during a 2 hour movie. Yeah. That shows you how invested I was in this thing. And I'm going to say this, the movie is personal for Marty, and the best movies for older directors are personal. And I feel like all of the actors in this movie are saying something with their performances. Yeah. And I was going to say a few minutes ago, all those scenes with Pacino going, Pacino, and yelling at the top of his lungs.
They're great.
With De Niro sitting there, they're subtle. Great. I'd rather sit and watch like 15 of those than watch like half of anything that's coming out in new movies today. So for me, this movie hit in all the places it needed to. It's one of my favorites of the year. As of right now, it's in my top 10, and my favorite movie that I watched during the Never Seen It November Challenge for 2019.
Thank
it's
you, getting everybody, by the way.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Not to you, Nick, because you didn't even hit 10.
I didn't hit 10, no.
But for me,
I had to finish NaNoWriMo, which I did. I finished NaNoWriMo with 2 marathon writing sessions over the last 2 days of the month. Unfortunately, I can watch movies anytime. I can only get those words in that time frame. So,
Nick, you could even watch them on your phone. No, don't do that. Or Martin Scorsese will come hunt you down.
He probably will.
And blow you away. I think it was like Kev Brackett posted
over on social media, like a picture of somebody watching that on a fucking Zune.
Dude, that's him. That's him. He was watching The Irishman.
Scorsese's going to come and find you, Kev. I'm worried. Somebody check. If you're in St. Louis listening to this, please check on Kev Brackett. Make sure he's okay.
Dude, he's got a hit out on him. But for me, the movie, 9 out of 10. One of my top 10 of the year, near masterpiece. I mean, when you look at what Scorsese has put out, I think, come hate me, come beat me up, I think this is his best film since Casino. Boom. Mic drop right there, motherfucker. Loved it.
Like I said, I enjoyed it, and I can certainly see that. I can certainly see that reaction. I don't understand the reaction that, like, oh my god. Like, first of all, you knew it was going to be 3.5 hours when you sat down to watch it, so I don't understand people complaining.
Dude, this isn't his first movie that's long. Like, get the fuck over it. Or, you know?
I feel like I went into it with that expectation, but I was pleasantly surprised that this thing kept me invested the whole time. I was not bored at any time during that 3.5 hours. I have watched some shit heaps, and I mean some goddamn god-awful shit heaps that are like 100 minutes that felt like seriously 4 times longer than The Irishman actually is. Like, seriously. I still feel like I'm watching some of those movies now.
Dude, as you said, if you're invested in the characters, you care about the story.
The great thing is, like, the performances in the story, like, it's all great. It's all really, really great. And I like that each actor is kind of used to great effect. I like that you get Pacino doing his normal Pacino kind of thing. Like, he has those over the top, like, Pacino moments that you expect. Those are great. Pesci playing completely against type, very subtle, very muted, very quiet performance. Great. De Niro, very, very layered, very, very nuanced. Easily my favorite performance of the film. You mentioned earlier in the review that Pesci was yours. De Niro's by far my favorite. This performance, and if you doubt that, watch this film again and just watch his performance.
I watched it twice.
He is so layered.
And I didn't feel that runtime one bit the second time either. So, I mean, people that are complaining about runtime,
it's paced extremely well, even over a 3.5 hour runtime. It is totally not agreed. Too long. I don't think it's too long. I feel like in order to maybe heighten some of the dramatic punch of some things, you could have probably shortened it. Yes. But
you could have snipped this, snipped that, yeah.
But you could say that about any film, really. I mean, that's not the point. The point is like, I wasn't bored at all during the runtime of this film. I was invested the entire time. And that, especially in the 3.5 hour runtime, that takes the hand of a master craftsman like fucking Scorsese. Like, we had to suffer through Kingsman: The Golden Circle, like, what, 2 years ago? I'm still watching that movie right now. That's how fucking long that dude, movie feels.
Nick, I think you need therapy.
I do need therapy. I can't get
past it. You need to take some of that
it.
Patreon money and get you a shrink, and you need to talk to someone that I don't even know. Who can handle that? Stop sucking your own, dude. What are you doing?
I was sucking my bourbon bottle, ladies and gentlemen.
Are you that horny? Oh my god! Sucking my fucking Crystal Head vodka bottle over here.
Jesus, God!
I can suck the blood from the penis and put the balls in his mouth.
I could actually make this bottle give me head though.
There you go. Well, I think when we start talking about the bottle getting head, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for The Irishman. So let us know what you thought. I know, like I said, a lot of our even podcasting peers, like, I know I haven't listened to Dan and Caleb's review of it yet. I wanted to get ours recorded first. Theirs came out today as of recording day. That's already out. Check out Netflix and Swill's review of the film as well. I know Paul from The Countdown was talking about how long he felt it was. Gerald from 2Ps was talking about how long he felt it was. I don't know. I'm interested to check out their reviews and see what they did cherry pick out that they didn't like.
What shocks me is with anyone that knows film calls something that's 3.5 hours yeah. long. Like,
the length of this film was least problem with it.
Watch more movies if you think that's
maybe,
long. Come on.
Maybe I'm just too much of a Scorsese newbie that I just don't have. It's kind of like with Joker. Like, everybody was talking about, oh, Joker takes this and takes that from Scorsese, and it's like this and it's like that. But yeah, I've never seen any of those fucking movies. And most of the people that've seen Joker haven't seen those movies either, so they don't fucking care.
No, I mean, let's be clear. Joker is definitely a gigantic Marty Scorsese throwback, but I didn't mind because he was a producer and he almost directed it and whatever else. But again, I'm going to say this one more time. If you're a cinephile, a true cinephile, and you're complaining about a 3.5 hour runtime, you haven't watched enough movies. Boom. End of story.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. End of story. So stay tuned on Monday, ladies and gentlemen, for our normal Monday-sode, Super Monday-sode action. We're going to have the trailer for Bond 25 going to be dropping in there. We'll probably talk about Black Widow, even though Justin and I still haven't brought ourselves to be able to watch it. The reactions I've seen to it have been all over the fucking reservation. Some people are like, yay, because it's a Marvel movie. And
I mean, your favorite Hellboy, David Harbour, he's in the trailer
and
he's wearing a cool helmet.
Why now? You know, it is what it is. So stay tuned for the Monday.
Hubba, money, money, money.
We've got all sorts of stuff to cover on the show here, ladies and gentlemen. We love you. We are absolutely thrilled to have you here once again listening to the Epic Film Guys. Find us everywhere, literally everywhere, all over social media, at Epic Film Guys, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And Justin, where can they catch us if they want to tune in? If you've never heard the show, somebody recommended this show to you, and they sent you a corrupted file, and all it says is just Loy Sauce just wanting cum all the time.
That's a lot of cum.
Where can they find us out there on those podcatchers?
EpicFilmGuys.com, and we are literally everywhere. We're on every podcatcher that means anything to anybody, and we're on Spotify. So if you just search Epic Film Guys on Google, you'll be able to find us on anything you want to find us on.
We are the first several pages of results, I'm pretty sure. So
yes,
yeah, we love you, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, stay tuned for the normal Monday episode, and next Thursday special presentation. Going to be a longer form show, so you got to sit down for that. But ladies and gentlemen, 2018 in film retrospective with Jay Ledbetter of In Session Film, the 80s champ himself from the fantasy movie draft, Gerald Morris, Creepy Gerald from Two Peas, and the Velvet Drizzle, Sean Ennis from Stories of Your and Yours. Talking Hereditary, you're going to get to hear my thoughts on Hereditary. I finally watched it. I told Justin I rated it like 2 out of 10, and then he threatened to go jump off a bridge. I had to talk him down and promise him I would rate it higher. So you get to hear my actual thoughts on Hereditary and our top 5 of 2018 in film. I didn't, again, with these retrospectives, some people might ask, well, I wasn't Justin on it or whatever, but Justin and I already did the top 10 of 2018 back at the beginning of this year. So I don't want to just get Justin back on to rehash the same thing. I want to get new voices so that way you guys can hear new perspectives in here, especially Jay Ledbetter, who like literally, like, because they do extra film for In Session, all his shit's like super fucking indie shit that you've never heard of. So it'll at least give you a couple things maybe to add to your watch list. So Justin, any parting words, anything else you want to say before we roll out this bad boy?
We love you. We love you. We love you. And we know that you love the God of Podcasting. Believe me, we are fighting to get him back on this show. He's a busy man.
He is a very, very busy man.
You're not my dad. If you want to know what this dude's doing, you need to join our fan group, the Hopesters Dumpster. Number one, follow and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/epicfilmguys. Then join the Hopesters Dumpster.
That's right.
You can get all of the updates that you want.
That's
on
right.
The God of Podcasting, the Loy Sauce, the man himself.
Pack him in real good and tight.
Yeah.
The man with the socks. So yes, we're working on getting him back on the show. The holiday season is extremely busy for this guy. He's going to be on.
We'll find him.
We'll be talking about something soon. You'll hear him.
We'll track him down, ladies and gentlemen. But we super, super appreciate everybody out there for tuning in, for listening, and we absolutely love you. So thank you all out there so, 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 so much for listening. Justin, until next time.
Next time?
Yeah.
We will see, I think, you. Yeah.
Oh, yes, Pod Daddy.
The movies.
That's a lot of cum.
Ho, 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 motherfucker.
This episode is brought to you by the Epic Film Guys patrons, our amazing producers and executive producers who pay us to do the show that we love to do. So a huge, huge shout out to Alan Gallerisi, Brandon Frederick, Caleb Brownlee,
Dan Brennick, John DeQuilla, Julio Oliveira,
Deborah Kinney, Chip Moore, Chris Maltesos, Justin Winters, Scott LaVar, The Running Man, The Flash, Paul Prezula, and Gerald Morris. And a very special thank you to our top-level patrons, our executive producers on the show.
Chris Yaney, Robert Moreno, our resident kaiju expert.
Bill Sutton, and Destruction in Human Form, Jared Taylor. Thank you all so, so much. And we'll see you
at the movies.